Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing, Sal?
I'm doing great. We got our favorite guest, our premier ag agronomist, and we have caught him in the combine today.
It's happening.
Can you multitask there, Glenn?
I can.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Don't spill any corn when you go to the semi, because it'll be videoed and we'll be able to see it, and then we'll bring it up forever. We'll throw it up to you.
There you go. No, here's the deal. Number one, grandma had to run off. Ken and Randy had a bit of emergency, so she's watching the grandchildren, and my other driver is gone to the doctor, so I'm out here single-handedly taking in this crop.
Oh, but my gosh.
Good. It's all good.
Looks like you're about to dump. I can see behind you in the glass.
Yeah, well, I've got a camera in the tank, and I'm just about to run over, so I'm going to have to unload here in just a second. But it's all good. What questions have you guys got today?
Well, we didn't prepare a question of the day, though, did we?
We did not.
Oh, I know.
We didn't.
I got an easy one then. I can come up with this one. Favorite ice cream, Glenn. What is your favorite ice cream and favorite topping?
Yeah, so that's good. I love chocolate almond or Rocky Road. I don't really appreciate the marshmallows. They kind of ruin it with that.
The marshmallows.
I don't really appreciate the marshmallows, but I like the rest of it, you know. And when it comes to varieties, I tell you, when it comes to brands, you know, maybe we can get a sponsorship here. I like hard ice cream. I don't like soft. No. I don't like my ice cream to get soft. I love hard ice cream. So Häagen-Dazs is my new current favorite brand right now. So
we'll take Dairy Queen off the list.
Show quality. Yeah, that'll be in the comments. Jeff,
what's that?
I said that'll be your comments. We'll take Dairy Queen off the list. Jeff, what do you like for your ice cream?
I tell you, I like hard ice cream, and I like a dip of strawberry and a dip of chocolate at the same time.
I'll be dying. Jeff, I am not quite with you, but I like strawberry and butter pecan. And I'm the same way. I'm not a fan of the soft serve. That's an affront to ice cream. Unless it's homemade.
And it's hard to beat Schwann's too. The good old Schwann's guy or yellow or whatever they call it now, bringing you a gallon tub of the vanilla. It's still pretty good ice cream.
All right. Well, Glenn, let's talk shop. What do growers need to be thinking about right now?
Well, I tell you, there's something to be learned right here where I'm at. I'm in a field that is, it's pretty decent ground. I would say it's great ground, but it's been pretty decent ground. But normally you can't tease crazy high yields out of it because of drainage issues. And since I don't own this farm, this is a farm that I rent, it's pretty difficult to make the investment in tile and that sort of thing. And so this is the first season that I farmed this farm since I had a friend of mine come in, map the field and actually ditch it using 21st century technology, right? You're basically a Wolverine ditcher. They can either map it or they can use LIDAR, which is like remote sensing, to get an elevation. And then they come in and cut the ditches down to, like an inch, right? We're talking fractions of a foot. And what's interesting is like this 3/4 mile long on the west side, south of the river. And if you try to do that with a flipper ditcher, there's no way at that 0.5% fall entirely. And so this thing is draining beautifully. And I think I've got a 245 average on this side of the river.
Wow.
And actually that's pretty close. I've been taking my shoes off pretty regularly and double checking the monitor and with the loads and the acres. And that's probably pretty close. It's not going to be 250, but it's probably a hair over 245. So I'm pretty excited about that. I didn't put a bunch of tile in somebody else's field. I basically hired someone else to come in and make improvements. And it seemed pretty hefty at the time, right? You know, when I spent 12,000, whatever it was to get this field ditched, But it's probably made that up in a single year. In fact, probably it'll be more than made up in a single year. Right. Wow. So, it's again, right. You know that I'm an active agronomist, right? I'm not a, an agronomy activist. And to me, it's all about making the best acres better, right? It's about making, you know, we've talked about some of Premier's best clients, right? And what separates the top growers from just the mediocre growers. And most of the time it's they invest in the best ground. And oftentimes it wasn't the best when they bought it, but they bought it with the vision that we're going to improve this, and what they farm are the best acres, right? Because it's easier to make money. It's easier to be successful when you're rolling out great big yields. Because I'm telling you, I've made some, you know, you saw me just yesterday get a little stretch-faced about marketing, right? The basis absolutely sucks right now. And, you know, we all feel like we're taking a little bit in the shorts, but the one way to really overcome poor marketing is to just be a great grower, right? Yeah. Be a great, great at yields. What else would I tell growers to think about right now? You know, I'm looking at this farm thinking, man, this needs to be worked. We need to get cover crop on this, try to get it structured just south of me. I don't know if you guys can see or not. Can you see to the south of me, the green strips?
Yes.
Yeah, so those were rye strips. That's where they planted watermelons. And so sometimes you have to say, hey, I'm not a good enough farmer to farm this ground. Well, that's sand. That's where I'm at here is like Selma, Vincennes, Zip, really heavy, kind of poorly, I wouldn't say poorly drained now, but it's slow permeability. That over there is sugar sand. That would be like north of Cortland, for those of you that are familiar with Cortland. And when I go to corn, if I can, I've got some guys that will sublet that for watermelons. And they've already got the watermelons pulled for the year. They've pulled the plastic. They've already come in and ripped the runs where they run school buses to pull melons. And of course, it gets really compacted. But anyway, the takeaway here is I am all jacked up about getting fertilizer on this, getting it worked down, getting it prepared for next season, right? Because, man, it's a lot easier to have a good crop when you can get off to a good start. And how do you get it off to a good start with cover crops? It's getting them established. There's nothing worse than putting out cover crops in the middle of October or later, not getting any growth. Then when it comes spring, you're like, well, do I terminate it? It's just now coming up good. I'm just now structuring the soil. I'm just now getting some cover. Well, yeah, you're almost like, well, it'd be sacrilege to kill this off right now. What happens? Then it starts raining. Next thing you know, you've got a big jungle.
Yeah.
And when I think about growers that are successful with cover crops, right, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of PFM in cover crops, right? You know what PFM is?
Yes.
just pure freaking magic.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And I meant that sour cat. Yeah, I can say freaking. What I want to say is there has been a lot of claims about cover crops that are just, they've been so over-exaggerated that it almost gives people a bad taste about cover crops. So what cover crops do is they do a wonderful job of structuring the soil. They do a wonderful job of managing erosion through the winter on our highly erodible acres, which I have a lot of those, right? And, third thing it does is it does create some crop competition for winter annuals, right? So if you're not a cover cropper, it's something you probably should be doing some. If you're an avid covered cropper, if you're avid and you think every acre should have a cover crop, you know, that good for you, man. I just know that there are two camps, right? There's the camps that terminate early, and those guys are generally very successful. And then there are a few guys that plant green, you know, that let it grow. They plant into the thing green. Oftentimes they have experience, they have expertise, and sometimes they even have special equipment to do that, right? Their planters are set up to go into a big, tall green crop. But I would say for most of our growers, It's about getting the cover crop out early, taking advantage of that stability that it gives the soil through the winter, terminating it early, and getting your crop planted early. That's one of the things that's top of mind.
Well, Glenn,
I mean, another thing that's top of mind, go ahead. Do you have another question? Yeah.
So if I'm going to put out a cover crop this fall, we're extremely dry, yes, you know, not much rain in the 10-day forecast. We're September 18th today. So it may be the 1st of October before we get some moisture. What kind of challenges am I going to have getting a cover crop established?
Yeah, that's a great question. Jeff, I wasn't expecting that out of you, man. That was a perfect question. That's the reason why starting early.
It was Sal's question. I stole it.
Great.
We'll have to give Jeff a star.
I'm just picking on you. Give him a dental bone. You know, that's what we do for the dog is give her a dog treat. So, your question is so great. That's one of the reasons I was talking about going earlier. And maybe using some kind of tillage to incorporate the seed, right? If we just go out, like I'm in, you know, 250 bushel residue, and even though this corn is planted early and was relatively short, there's still a lot of fodder out here, and that's the likelihood of getting seed to soil contact, right? So we can get that transfer of moisture. It's probably not going to be very good. But if a guy can come in with a vertical tillage tool, and by the way, that's the time to just wear the wheels off your vertical tillage is in the fall, not in the spring, right? Vertical tillage in the spring, in most cases, is kind of taboo, right? We tend to cause about as much harm as we do good. It may make you feel good that the surface is nice and dry looking, but when you started out turning over mud, it probably was not doing you very good. But in the fall is a great time to use vertical tillage. You know, maybe broadcast your fertilizer and get it incorporated along with your seed. Even if it's just really shallow, you'd be surprised. As dry as it is, we'll oftentimes have dew or we'll have moisture come up at night. And it's enough to get them started, especially cereal grains, right? Cereal grains, things like barley, things like cereal rye, wheat, triticale, any of those cereal grains are they have a lot of vigor, especially barley. I've used a lot of barley in the past. And, you know, if you get two rainfall events, it'll sprout on concrete, right? I've seen it at Larry Huffmeyer's around his bins, actually on the lip of the bin sprouting on concrete. So yeah, that was a great question. Great question, Jeff. You know, Jeff did the viewers don't know this, but Jeff did a presentation yesterday talking about fertilizer. And I don't know if you guys have done a high ground. Have you done a high ground podcast on that?
Not on that topic. No.
Yeah. So it was really interesting, right? Jeff was comparing the cost of nitrogen, right? Which we think everything is a little bit too high for the current commodity prices. But when you look at the amount of bushels it takes to buy nitrogen, when you look at the number of bushels it takes to buy potassium, they're right in line with where they've been historically, right? Phosphorus is maybe a little higher. And so, you know, when a guy is planning his fall fertility program, and I really like for guys to stay the course, right? If you ever want to see the wheels fall off of a farm, get in the habit of skipping putting on fertilizer, right? Yeah. So that's a habit we need to exclude. I would probably look more heavily at maybe supplementing your potassium next year, if that's the one is the bargain. Not that we won't put any phosphorus down, but maybe that's not your first dollar spend. Your first dollar spend is catching up on potassium, because we have plenty of soils, plenty of acres that are short on potassium. You know, I was thinking of things that I could potentially, you know, I'd love to talk about my grandchildren, but they're not in the cab with me today, right? And, you know, it's kind of breaking mine and Bennett's hearts both, right? Because Bennett's now in preschool, he's big enough. And if you gave him a choice between going to a parade or come to this combine, you better not tell him that I'm in the field shelling or he'd be in here. Now I have probably used Pavlov's response, right? I've historically, in fact, I probably have enough sugar in this cab to put a small town into a diabetic coma, right? Oh, so so it's not my design, but I'm telling you, he was in here last night singing and carrying on. Hey, seriously, here's probably the last thing I've got for you, and then I've got to get back to shelling. it's around monitoring this late crop. You know, the early crop was shorter. It's really good. It's actually higher than what I expected. The later crop I thought was going to be better probably than what it's going to be, right? I'm afraid this later crop, it really wasn't the tar spot. Not the tar spot didn't partially predispose it, but it really was just dry weather. And I told an audience this yesterday that these hillsides that you see scalded, they're probably not long for the world. They have died prematurely. They may or may not have black layered, and the kernel weight is probably going to be off on those fields. But here's the thing. If you want to get it, you're going to have to go after it. And if you're curious as a grower and you want to know, hey, where do I have any of these fields that are potentially problems? Go do a push test. It is so simple. Walk into the field, get out away from the end rows, push on the stalks pretty hard, give them a good shaking. And when you start getting 8 out of 20 that want to break down low, that's a field you probably better go after. And you're saying, well, gee, we got a pretty good weather forecast. Yeah, we always have a good forecast in the fall until some tropical depression spins up into a tornado, hits the coast of Texas, slips up through here. Next thing you know, you got high winds and moisture. And that's a terrible combination for shelling corn.
Okay. Anywho,
that's what's on my mind today. Well, any other questions, guys?
We better let you dump. Or you got something, Jeff?
No, I was going to say timely advice. I heard they're watching another tropical depression in the Gulf, so that's timely.
Looky there.
Look, he's full.
Yeah. I'm showing you that I'm out of room. So
yes,
I'm going to put on another hat now. Anyway,
fellas,
it has sure been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you,
Glenn. We'll see you.
All right.
Take care, guys.
That's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Please like and subscribe. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you.
Thank you.